Again from the CBS News Space Headquarters in New York, correspondent Walter Cronkite.
Everything's going well on the moon this morning. The lunar module is sitting on the moon at about a 9-degree tilt, and that hasn't given them any trouble. They've unloaded the lunar rovering vehicle. It seems to be working all right, a little trouble with the steering system, but apparently they're not too concerned about it. They had a little worry about Jim Irwin's suit and the consumables in it, but that doesn't seem to be worrying them either now. They decided that apparently it was just a faulty indicator light and flag, and not actually any trouble with the consumables themselves. Now, as they prepare the lunar rover for the first test, that's when Dave Scott takes it and drives it a little bit away from the lunar module, and they begin to line up its navigation system. That's the system that permits them to get back to the lunar module when they cannot see it by direct line of sight, when they're behind the hills or down in the craters that they'll be driving through. This will tell them exactly how to get home and how much of those precious consumables, air and oxygen, the oxygen and the water for the coolant that they have left. The television is off at the moment as they move it from a tripod, the camera from a tripod, to the lunar roving vehicle. Then we'll get television for a little while as they make some more tests. We'll lose it again as they move out for the navigational testing. Got another picture of them perhaps before they then begin the actual lunar ride. The that ride is scheduled this morning for about almost 4 hours if they go ahead and take the whole trip. This one, like those contingency samples they grab from the lunar surface right after they get out of the lunar module, Falcon, is really to be sure that they sample all of the critical areas in case they had, for some emergency or other, to take off from the moon before they could complete the next two walks scheduled for tomorrow and Monday. They'll go to the very edge of that 1,200-foot deep, mile-wide gorge, Hadley Rill. Then they'll go down to the foot of the Apennine Mountains so that they can test both the rill and the mountainous area, and then back to the lunar module. This ride today on Saturday is cut short a little bit because part of their time outside of the lunar module must be spent setting up the scientific experiments around the lunar module. The nuclear power station that will power all of the experiments for more than, indefinitely, certainly more than a year. The seismometer that will be added to those placed on the moon by Apollos 12 and 14 and will give for the first time triangulation of the moon quakes and the artificial moon quakes created by man by plunging the S-4B third stage of the Saturn rocket booster onto the moon surface with a force of 11 tons of TNT, and then the ascent stage of the lunar module is also sent plunging back onto the moon surface. By knowing exactly where those impacts take place, and now with three seismometers on the moon, they're able to get a pretty good fix on the moon's crust and what really happens when it is disturbed by such an impact. Al Shepard, I've got a small apology to make to you a moment ago. I did say something about this being the first drive on the moon. Wally Shira up here with me points out that you had the first drive on the moon with that golf club you had along, and this is the first ride on the moon.
Well, your apology's accepted, Walter, and let me say you've done your homework extremely well on this business of triangulation. One of the things I think is perhaps overlooked so many times about the numbers of flights is that with the number 15, coupled with the equipment of 14 and 12, that we will have this triangulation of which you spoke, and a much better handle at tying together all of the various scientific pieces of equipment that are being used to transmit the information back to Earth. So it really locks the total thing together, as you pointed out.
It does. This flight, everybody has been saying, if all goes well, will return far more scientific knowledge than all the other moon flights together. And this kind of acceleration of information coming back, the scientific information, will continue right on through Apollo 16 and 17 because we're adding to the baseline of knowledge. Obviously, the whole top of the tree begins to flower.
That's exactly right. Of course, the rocks come back and they can be studied and dissected and looked at very carefully and examined for several years to come. And in the meantime, of course, the equipment continues to operate for several years. So all the scientists that are involved have a chance to look at a tremendous amount of data over a long period of time.
Question here, before you get to Risling, I don't think we're to Risling yet. Risling ought to be about 1.4, and we've only gone 0.4.
Roger, Jim. We think you're short of Risling now.
Probably Risling out about 11 o'clock to it, Dave.
Okay.
About maybe 1 kilometer.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe, the rover handles quite well. We're moving, and I guess an average of about 8 kilometers an hour. It's got very low damping compared to the 1G rover, but the stability is about the same. It negotiates small craters quite well, although there's a lot of roll. It feels like we need the seatbelts, doesn't it, Jim? Yeah, really do.
They're moving about
the
5 miles an hour.
The steering is quite responsive, even with only the rear steering. It does quite well. There doesn't seem to be too much slip. I can maneuver pretty well with the thing. If I need to make a turn sharply, why, it responds quite well. There's no accumulation of dirt in the wire wheels.
So they didn't get their front steering working properly. They're steering
just
with
like
the rear wheels.
Just like in the owner's manual, Dave.
They were heading right.
Yeah,
man. Okay, I've got it on the wall here for a minute, and we're up to 12.
Going full speed,
up
12 kilometers an hour.
Are you deliberately slowing down? I slow down.
Almost,
so I get
it's almost their maximum, 8 miles an hour.
Oh, look at this little fresh boy, look at that. Lots of very angular frags all over the thing. Yeah, we passed several of those. Okay, I'm going to cut down to the south here, Jim. Yeah, that'd probably be best. Because I think that's probably, range 0.7. I'm still not rising. Shouldn't be. Whoa. Hang on. But we have a large subdued one at our 1 o'clock position. I'd estimate 50 kilometers wide.
Roger, Jim.
0.8. Okay, how are we doing on the heading, Jimmy? Hey, if we're heading right for Elbow, pick a spot here, okay? Do we have to pick your way?
No.
Halfway to checkpoint one. We shouldn't. What I thought was Risling was probably not Risling. Risling is a larger crater, and it's out at about 1 point. Should be about 1.4.
That's affirmed, Jim. Right on.
Okay. Fucking Bronco.
Yeah, man.
Get back off in the power, it keeps right on going.
As I was saying earlier, Walter, the fact that the ranging device is working properly will relieve them a lot of the problems in navigation.
Lighting is pretty tough, Joe. We're going to have to make sure we...
Kenton Rover, this is Houston. Your range to Riesling is about 1.7, so you may be short of that still.
They just picked off 1.7 and are relative bearing 036.
There's the rill.
Yeah. We're looking down and across the rill. We can see craters on the far side of the rill.
Roger, like advertised.
You'll have to turn the camera on. Yeah, we're getting into the blocky stuff. About 1 foot, quite angular, irregular surface. We're right at the edge of the rail, I think.
Yes, sir.
We're on the edge of the rail. You better believe it. I think we're heading right.
I don't see elbow, though.
Yeah,
I see elbow.
Hey, we have to stay up on the high part of the rail here.
Yeah.
See, elbow is not as prominent as we thought, but there's a definite crater there. I see elbow.
Yeah, it's subtle, though.
So I'm going to
turn on the camera.
Hey, look, there's a big block on the edge of the rail there that must be 10 meters.
There are lots of outcrops.
But on the far side, I don't see anything that would suggest really layering. There's a lot of debris, big angular blocks all the way down, but nothing that you'd really call exact layers.
Roger, we copy.
They get us back up on it. Back up on the ridge, it's smoother.
Yeah, I think that the heading we were on the heading a little too far west. We're getting back up on the higher part of the real rim. At this point, I'd estimate the slope is probably, about 3 degrees.
Yeah, there's a definite ridge or rim that runs along the rail, maybe 70, 80 meters from the inflection point that drops down into the rail, don't you think, Jim?
Yeah.
And we're heading toward the east side there of elbow.
Yeah, we're in good shape. We can see elbow, and we can see the front all the way down to the spur, and there's not a big block on it.
Okay. Keep talking. Beautiful description.
Hang on.
I see one large block up about a quarter of the way up the front, Dave.
Okay, hang on there.
Yeah.
There's a big one partially buried. Oh, there's some beautiful geology out here. It's spectacular.
I'll tell you,
Paul was never like this.
Oh, man.
I wish we could just sit down and play with the rocks for a while. Look at these things. They're shiny, sparkly.
It's Jim Irwin.
Look at all these babies here. Gosh.
Come on, Dave. There'll be a lot of them. Let's get back.
Can't resist it. Go find something neat at St. George.
Well, the crew sure is talking a lot more now. They've got something to talk about. I think that's the real answer to it. On the way to the moon, many others have done that. This crew is up to 20 now that's left Earth orbit on the way to the moon. And as a result, they didn't have anything new to tell us. They sure do now.
Wally, I think it was you were suggesting earlier that on the way out, that was territory that had been covered before pretty well, and they were working on their flight plan and the moon plan. Now they're really at work. And the description is absolutely beautiful. Official recognition.
And you all want to have a great view this time.
After all of this.
Okay, Jim, let's go sample this rock.
Can hardly wait.
Stay in here, Dave. Can you see him? This is unreal. The most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
It's somewhat more glowing than Roger, isn't it?
Sounds like looking into the Grand Canyon for the first time.
It does that.
Uphill, too. Is that ever uphill?
A reminder, Walter.
There's one boulder.
conversation we were having about what do you say when you see these things, and you're a journalist and a commentator, and your word was wow.
All right.
On one side of it, with lots of bubbles. And they're about a centimeter across, and one corner of it has got all this glass covering on it. Seems like there's a linear fracture through one side. It almost looks like that might be a contact. It is, within the rock. It looks like we have a maybe a breccia on top of a crystalline rock. It's sort of covered with glass. I can't really tell, but I can see a definite linear feature through one side of it, which is about a fifth, and the glass covers both sides of what I guess I'm calling a contact, and there's also parallel to that contact one surface which is quite flat, only for about 8 inches or so. Looks like it's been chipped off. The boulder itself is on the order of about a meter across. And a meter across, and maybe...
You see, in Mission Control, like they have a picture on their screen, the upper left-hand corner there. They're not feeding it to us, though, apparently, on the
upper side. Got to fill it up one side, and the other side is in a shadow. I can't really tell whether... It doesn't look like it's filled. It's got to fill it on the downslope side, and the upslope side is open and free. As a matter of fact, it looks like it's almost excavated beneath it. That looks fairly reasonable, doesn't it? It sure does. It sure does, and I can see underneath the upslope side, whereas on the downslope side, it's piled up. Boy, that is really something. Hey, let's get some good pictures of that before we disturb it too much.
Roger, David, can you see crystal clear, and we've got a beautiful family.
You and the boulder on the TV, and it probably is fresh, probably not older than 3.5 billion years.
Can you imagine that, Joe? Here sits this rock, and it's been here since before creatures roamed the sea on all the earth.
Well said, Dave.
We ought to check the dust on the lens on these cameras. United States in Space, a decade of achievement. And I'm very proud to have the opportunity here to play postman and pull out a cancellation device, cancel this stamp. There's August the 2nd, 1971, first day of issue. What could be a better place to cancel a stamp than right here at Hadley Rill? Well, in my left hand, I have a feather. In my right hand, a hammer. I guess one of the reasons we got here today was because of a gentleman named Galileo a long time ago who made a rather significant discovery about falling objects in gravity fields. And we thought that where would be a better place to confirm his findings than on the moon. And so we thought we'd try it here for you. The feather happens to be appropriately a falcon feather for our falcon. And I'll drop the two of them here and hopefully they'll hit the ground at the same time. How about that?